Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
And welcome to the show, and I'm delighted to have with me today the wonderful Richard Newman. Richard, hello to you.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Well, fantastic. And Richard, for the benefit of people that may not have come across you, just tell us a bit about your background and your expertise.
Sure. So I deal with advanced communication skills for leaders or aspiring leaders in business. And essentially what tends to happen for a lot of people is that they get promoted through the work they're doing because they're doing a great job. And then they reach a certain point where they need to be in charge of a team. They need to be more of an ambassador of the company. And so they need to speak to larger groups and be more effective in the way that they communicate. And those aren't necessarily the skills that got them there, but they suddenly need this new set of skills. And so people talk to us about wanting to have executive presence, gravitas, a greater personal impact, also storytelling, where a lot of people, particularly in accounting firms, they've got complex, quite dry data, and they need to bring it to life in a way that is really compelling, engaging, and particularly with numbers. People come to us and say they have to tell the story behind the numbers, because 3% in a meeting could be good news, bad news, could be a big number, could be a small number. So they have to make sure that they tell people what's the story behind the numbers. Yeah. And this is something that I've been working on for such a long time. My story starts in an unusual place where I originally started teaching English to monks. So I was living in India, up near Darjeeling, in a little place called Kalimpong, where I was teaching English to these Tibetan monks who didn't speak any English when I arrived. And so I was living there with them in this monastery, needing to use my body language and tone of voice just to connect with them day to day and communicate. And by the end of 6 months, they could all have a good conversation with me in English. And so it taught me the power of nonverbal communication on a deeper level, a richer level than most people are aware of. So most people think about body language as scratching your nose and folding your arms. But I learned a deeper and a richer way to connect with them and really truly to communicate through it. And then studied acting in London for 3 years, a fabulous acting school, where I learned more about storytelling and stage presence and a proper way to use your voice. And then was able to be in the right place at the right time to win a big client, which is the Formula One team. That at the time was struggling and have since become champions. I'm not allowed to say who, but they had a complex job, much like accountants, where they had very dry, dull information, such as the amount of the percentage of resin impregnated into unidirectional or weave carbon fiber and how it goes into the autoclave. And it was very dry, dull stuff. And they wanted us to bring it to life in a way that was far more compelling and engaging for sponsors from around the world who'd be investing 40 or 50 million pounds per year into the work that they did. And so we had to figure out, well, how do you do that? How do you take any data, make it concise, compelling, and engaging? And then we started teaching our clients, and that's led now to working with about 50,000 people around the world, including many accounting firms, but also many other industries, telecoms, pharmaceuticals, often where people have that complex data that needs to be concise and compelling.
Well, that's all we've got time for. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. It's clear that you're passionate about what you do, Richard. And as long as I've known you, you've always been that way. But it's not a trait, is it, that you associate with technical professionals like accountants, engineers, lawyers? They don't have that passion a lot for what they do.
Actually, I think that a lot of them do, but sometimes it can feel like it's hidden. Some of the people who we work with in the world of finance, who actually you see their passion bubbling underneath, and they're just trying to figure out the right way to express it because they know that they need to be factual. They've got to stick to what the numbers truly say. They don't want to be overselling things, and you never should. You've got to deal with the truth. But the point that I like to say to people is that ideas don't speak for themselves. The numbers don't speak for themselves. People will look at you and want to know, what do these numbers really mean? And I found it easier to work with people, say, from an accounting or an engineering scientific background. It's much easier to work with them, because if you give them a model, a system, a strategy, they'll just apply it and they'll say, great, let me take that. That seems very logical. There's scientific proof behind it. I'm going to use it. Whereas when I work with people from marketing and PR companies, they tend to be a bit more trendy, and they say, don't mess with my image, I've got my brand going on here, and they're a little bit more resistant. So it's actually more straightforward working with accountants.
Yeah, I find that as a lot with our Business Development Academy. They want scripts to say and frameworks and structures, and show me what to do and how to, because that's their very logical brain, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So it does work really well for them. And so that's why we've sort of devised different systems that are so easy to apply. You can apply them every day to different situations, that they're very simple, straightforward to use. And you can use them in every different scenario.
So how coachable is stuff like impact and gravitas? Because one might assume that, wow, he's got it. She's just got that aura, that charisma. But it's pretty coachable, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the biggest myth that I want to bust for people. Because
you've got
to
bust away. Go on.
I will. So I find that some people say, oh, that person's a naturally great communicator, but I never will be. And this is absolute nonsense. Every single human being, unless there's some kind of major disability, everybody is born with a brilliant ability to communicate. That is what makes us the dominant species on the planet. So if you take a look at a book such as Yuval Noah Harari, wrote this brilliant book, Sapiens, and then Homo Deus that came out recently, where he's saying the reason we are the dominant species on the planet is that we are able to communicate and collaborate in a mass level, where millions of us will buy into ideas and concepts such as government and money in a way that chimpanzees and bees could never do that. But we're able to do this. So we have this ability. There's two ways you can go with how you coach someone. If you learn certain techniques, you can sort of manipulate people into believing that you have more gravitas, but it comes a bit fake. Instead, what we talk about is stripping away all of the armor, stripping away the bad habits and the behaviors that have come on through a career where you may have been knocked down, you may have felt rejected, your boss may have said that they didn't like what you were doing, and suddenly these bad habits and behaviors and armor protection builds up such that you go into a meeting completely poker face with a totally monotone voice thinking, well, at least if I'm doing this, I must sound professional and nobody can really criticize what I'm doing. And all we really do is to say to people, strip away all of the armor, just let it go and get back to the raw strength that you are born with, where you have this natural ability as a child to stand in a way that gravity is working with you. Because if you don't do that, you'll never stand up. You'll keep on falling over. So you learn to stand with gravity. You learn to move your arms as you express yourself. We limit ourselves in those aspects as we grow. And also, if you're working in an open plan office, people tend to start to mute their voices because they don't want to interrupt the people who are working around them. And when you're expressing yourself in an important meeting or a pitch or presentation, you've got to drop that armor and come back to what you are born with, your natural way of communicating, which is why I've spent the last 2 years dedicating to this book that I've been working on called You Were Born to Speak, because I genuinely believe that about people. It's not that you need to learn communication skills. You have them. You just have to learn how to get rid of the stuff that's holding you back.
Richard, you're uniquely qualified to talk about the erroneous idea that communication is this 7% what you say and 55% how you say it and body language. Just rip that apart for us and tell us how it came from and the whole story, because it's out there,
sure.
Isn't it?
It is. It's something that people are aware of, and some people very skeptical, and rightly so. Albert Mehrabian came up with this study many decades ago. People are aware of the statistics where supposedly what he said in this study is 7% of communication is words, 38% tone of voice, and 55% body language. But if you break down the study, effectively what happened is that a couple of dozen people were involved in it from one town in California. They were asking people a question such as, would you like a coffee? Are you free on Wednesday? And the person was only allowed to say the word maybe. And so how much are you really going to take from their words? You're going to take most of it from tone of voice and body language. And even Albert Mehrabian himself, I'm not saying anything against him, he went on BBC Radio a couple of years ago where he said, look, I don't know why it became so popular. I don't know why people talk about it. They take it out of context. It was never meant to mean what people think that it means. So having said that, how important are these elements? Well, you know, I certainly believe that both elements are important, that the verbal and the non-verbal. So yes, it's important to have a great style with your body language and voice to bring ideas to life. But if you don't have anything worthwhile to say, it's just a lot of song and dance and nothing behind it. So the substance must be there. Whereas what you need to have also is the delivery, because ideas don't speak for themselves. You can't just go into a meeting thinking, I've got a great concept here. I'll say it with a monotone voice and a poker face and everyone will love it, because they won't. You have to make sure you've got both. But the secret extra element that I found in the last few years, where I suddenly realized what was getting in the way for people, is that some people know how to express themselves well, and they've got great content, and they're still not working well or getting the results that they deserve. And the final piece is mindset. So often people go into a meeting and, you know, the well-known term around it would be that you choke in that situation and all the great preparation disappears, or you know what you should be doing, but you're limiting yourself because you don't feel that people will listen if you really express yourself. So we've been working hard with our clients in the last couple of years on mindset, making sure that when they are in those key situations, all of their brilliant potential can actually come to life.
That's an excellent point, mindset. In the work that I do around business development, going out there winning business, almost turning accountants into salespeople, they're certainly selling themselves. They struggle with confidence. And one of the foundations of confidence is competence. If you become better at something, you become more confident at doing it. So then you're more likely to do it and you get better results. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, I certainly would say that, although there's like an extra piece to think on this, which is from the Confidence Code, a book written by, partly written by Katty Kay, who presents for BBC America, where she wanted to find out, how do we get more equality in the workplace? And she found out that men will apply for a role if they've got 40% of what they need on their CV, then they'll just go for it. And women will only apply for it if they've got 100% or nearly 100% of what is required for the job. And so she kept on investigating this. She discovered that actually your confidence is more likely as an indicator of your success than your competence. Now, for me, they kind of go hand in hand. I certainly would say to people that you need to build up a sense of confidence and then gradually your confidence will flow from there. But what's more important to me is that people don't hold themselves back, but they don't self-limit themselves and say, well, I could never do that. People will never listen to this. And there was a lady who I was coaching. She had all the competence there. She was very intelligent, very knowledgeable, and she just kept on holding herself back through the confidence. So one was there, but the other one was not. And so what I was working with her on is that we like to work with people from the inside out and from the outside in. And what's strange is that you can have a sense of inner competence, but outwardly expressing a lack of confidence. And then that feeds your abilities where you think, okay, maybe I'm not confident in this situation. So as an example, I was coaching her for a speech she'd be giving to 200 people in a team meeting they were having. She kept on sort of ducking down and making small gestures, sort of leaning forwards towards the audience saying, look, I know that you're going to be bored about this.
Apologetic.
Very apologetic. And we kept on saying to her, what you're saying isn't obvious and it's not dull and it's genuinely engaging. But unless you physically represent it, then we won't have the confidence behind what you're doing. Mm. So we got her to physicalize confidence and not faking it, but going back to how she personally would have stood, would have gestured, would have used her voice when she was in a space of confidence. And when she got there, suddenly she started to feel better. And she started to connect with her inner confidence, and that then worked together with her competence to make sure that she was getting a better result. So I think that both are critical. If you get someone who comes into a room all confident and they've got nothing behind it, it's just a massive waste of time. But often people who are highly competent are lacking that confidence and not projecting it. And that's what I'm keen to give them.
When you talk about communication, it's primarily seen as me to the outside world, but you speak a lot about the inner dialogue, don't you? That communication that you have with yourself.
So this is something going back to what I mentioned about being in the monastery, which is the monkey mind. This little chattering monkey inside your head is essentially there for your survival. It wants to keep you alive. So if you stand up in front of a group of hungry looking mammals, such as a team of clients or colleagues before they go to lunch, your brain kicks in and your monkey mind says, get out of the building. These people could eat you. Run now. It doesn't like doing anything that could put you in danger. Equally, it doesn't like you being highly expressive because then maybe you could get knocked down. It also doesn't like change. And so if somebody like myself or you, if you go in and coach someone to change their behaviors, the monkey mind says, don't do it. Don't believe him. Whatever you've done in your life up until today has kept you alive. So keep on doing that stuff because then you'll still be alive tomorrow. Hmm. And the final piece of this that I see when coaching people for a meeting, a pitch, presentation, is that some people actually let that monkey mind's voice come out of their mouth, where they're saying things such as, I know that you're not really interested. I know that this is boring. And that's not her voice. That's the monkey saying, I want to be safe. I don't want you to criticize me. So I'm going to criticize myself. Mm. And so what I talk to people about is letting them know the monkey mind is there to keep you alive. So just give it a little bit of respect, but just turn down the volume. And you can also speak to the monkey mind in an inner dialogue with simple things that will reassure it. So the best thing that I've found that you can say to the monkey mind, just to settle it down, make sure that you can perform at your best, is you just say to it, it's okay, I'm in the right place. And then your monkey mind will sort of search the computer of your brain and say, is he in the right place? He is. He's supposed to be in this meeting room at 9:30. Okay, he's in the right place. Maybe I should calm down. And then you can say to it, I know what I'm doing. Providing you do know what you're doing, that will work. So yeah. You can say to it, I'm in the right place. I know what I'm doing. I'm the right person for the job. And the monkey mind starts to soothe down, calm down, and then you can be your best self. The key thing, though, to remember is never let the monkey mind's voice come out of your mouth. If you're worried, if you're panicking, don't worry about it. Just be like a swan gliding across the water. The little legs can be kicking underneath, like your little voice could be going on in your head. But all that anybody else sees is the gliding across the water unless you advertise that inner mind. So just let it to never come out.
So in the world of accountancy, Richard, you've worked with them a lot. They're technically brilliant. Sometimes socially they struggle a bit. What, in your view, separates the good accountants from the great ones? Because it's not just prowess with numbers, is it?
Personality and people skills is mattering much more. And your ability to make change happen. So certainly since the recession, where people know, you know, you've got to evolve or die, you need to make sure that you're making changes. You need to respond to where culture currently is that you need to be focusing much more on your people skills. And if an idea is good, let's act on it right now and let's make stuff happen. And let's not go through seven levels of bureaucracy and go to another committee meeting. And so something that we did that was very effective for one company is that we went in with a storytelling system and we said, look, with all the numbers that you've got, if they say that you should make a change or they say that there's a piece of advice that you should be giving, turn them into an effective story and make sure that everybody is telling the story with the same kind of framework. We taught one of their teams around doing this and they said, okay, everybody, every day when you send every email, you use this framework. This is the story that is going to shift the way that your company works and shift the way you deal with your clients. And so it got to the point where every day, every email was coming out with the same kind of storytelling framework. They would use it with their clients. We then trained a bunch of agencies that were giving them data and information. So everybody likes the idea of big data these days, but what do you do with it? So we showed them, this is how you find the story within the data so you can make change happen within your firm so you more rapidly progress, but also that you can make change for your clients too. So they understand simply, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is why I should do it. This is why I should care. And this is the action that I should be taking. Yeah. And so gone are the days where you can just get up with a PowerPoint deck and say, here's a leave behind document and think that anyone's going to care. Bullets will absolutely kill your message, kill the attention, and kill any chance of there being action taken on it. It's time to shift away.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And when my accounting clients are out networking, instead of answering that elevator pitch, what do you do with I'm an accountant or we help our clients with tax, I say, tell it with a story. So that's music to my ears. This idea that, well, I'm an accountant, but you might come across a few of those. Can I share with you why we're a little bit different? Or can I share with you the kind of things I do with my client? Yeah, sure. Then you've got the permission to tell a story.
Yeah, going up to someone at a networking event saying, hello, I'm an accountant, isn't particularly engaging. But if you talk to them about, you know, how did you get involved with this? And so we've been coaching people in accounting firms to talk more about, you know, this is my background. This is why I care about it. This is what my interest is. And this is what I'm most passionate about. This is what I love achieving for people. So there's much more of a story that goes through that and not just saying this and this and this, but actually telling a story behind. You know, I was working with a client last week and we managed to achieve this. We've been doing it for 18 months and there were some ups and downs, but eventually we did this and that's what I love about it. And I'd love to do something like that for you too. Yeah. So that's the place that we need to be.
What kind of frameworks do you coach around stories, Richard? Because there's lots of different ways to tell a story, just like there's lots of different books and movies.
Yeah, absolutely. So the key thing with storytelling, like you said, there is lots of books and movies. A lot of people think that they are great storytellers because they've heard a lot of stories or they've seen a lot of movies. And I heard this said really well recently by Robert McKee, who wrote the book Story. And I was lucky enough to do an hour-long interview with him. And he said that, you know, thinking that you're a good storyteller because you've heard stories is a bit like thinking that you're a brilliant composer because you occasionally listen to music. It doesn't work like that. So you need to figure out, okay, what is it that human beings connect with from a story? And so some people have heard about Joseph Campbell's Hero with a Thousand Faces, which is where the hero's journey, the iconic hero's journey, comes from. But a lot of people, even somebody I was working with yesterday, again, an accounting firm, was saying to me, he knew about the hero's journey, but he could never get it to work because there's so many stages, the sort of 12 steps that you have to go through and the battle and the quest and the climax and all of this. And he said, I just don't understand how I actually use this. And so what we did is boil all of it down, looking at all the different story frameworks, figuring out what the core elements. So the main things for people to keep in mind, if you're keen to use this idea, start telling stories, the first thing you have to remember is that all human beings are motivated by pain and pleasure. And every great story has pain and pleasure. If a story was boy meets girl, boy likes girl, girl likes boy, they get married, have a baby, the end. Terrible story, because there's no elements of pain versus pleasure. There's no drama in that. And so what we need to think about is, first of all, let's say you're going to meet an important client or an important member of your team. You're never the hero of the story. The person you're speaking to is the hero of whatever story you're going to tell. And so you need to think about, what are their pains? What are their concerns? What are their challenges? What's keeping them awake at night? And you start with the conversation from there, along the lines of, I understand that you've been having these concerns and challenges. And ultimately, if we don't do anything about this, this is the pain that you may be worried could come in your direction. Or you can use your own words, challenges, concerns, issues, and just connect with them from that point of view that always happens at the beginning of the story. There's somebody who's down on their luck. You know, it's like it's Spider-Man before he gets his powers. He's being picked on at school. The girl next door doesn't like him. Or Harry Potter is stuck under the stairs and he's being teased and ridiculed and he's having a terrible life and he doesn't know that he's got these great powers. Then you take the hero of your story, which is your team or your client, and you take them towards that bit where Spider-Man gets his powers and Harry Potter gets his letter that takes him to Hogwarts, which is where you paint a better future. So essentially what you need to do for people in a great story is sell the future. The reason that we watch a movie is we've seen a 2-minute trailer that says there's pain, there's challenges, but hey, here's a potential future. Who knows if we're going to get there or how it's going to happen? And so you can say that for your team along the lines of, wouldn't it be great if 6 months from now we could be in this position where you'd gain this, you'd gain this, and you'd gain this? What if we could achieve that future? And so you've got this contrast then going on between pain and pleasure, and that's where great stories come from. And therefore, the story begins where you go into how, the detail, and the journey.
Yeah, this is great, Richard. I've got a few quick questions for you that all of your answers have got to be under 10 seconds.
Okay.
What do you love most about what you do?
I love the journey that people have from when they start with habits, fears, armor, or strategies that aren't working. And by the end of a day or 2 days, they become more of themselves. It's not about they become someone else. They become more of who they are. That's what I love.
Do you have a personal philosophy for success?
Each day is really about being the best version of you. Don't compete with anybody else. Compete with yourself to be the best version of you.
Okay. What does the first 60 minutes of a typical Richard Newman day look like?
Depending on the time I wake up, I get shaken awake by two lively little children. I then like to have something healthy to start the day. I like to go for a run, which I did first thing this morning. I have a hot shower, then a cold shower. So I get myself energized for the day and then focus on what are the big goals that I'm facing.
Great. What thinker, book, or movement has most shaped your philosophy of life or business?
When I was 16 years old, I was given a book on communication skills by a friend of mine who said, Richard, you're terrible at communication. Check out this book. And it became the holy grail to me. It opened up my eyes to a whole new world of possibility.
Is there anything you believe deeply that other people think is crazy?
Everybody is terrific at communication if they just let themselves unleash the natural potential they have.
Is there anything you've changed your mind on in the last few years and why?
I used to think that someone's style and their storytelling ability was the most important part of communication. But recently I've realized actually it's their mindset, because that's the piece that really gets in the way.
What frustrates you most about your job?
What frustrates me is that people often don't put as much time, attention, and investment into this area as they should do, where sometimes people will say, hey, Richard, could you change everything about the way our team communicates for the next 20 years and we'll give you 40 minutes and 100 people? And I'll say to them, no, give me a few people, give me several days, and then you've got a deal.
Yeah. What do you think is going to be the biggest change in your world coming up over the next few years?
A lot of people's attention is going into social media, online. People are spending more time with their screens. And what that means is that people's ability to connect with other human beings, we're getting less practice with it. So it's actually going to become harder to teach people how to do that because they have less day-to-day practice.
Final question. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given in your career?
Compete with yourself. Start each day thinking, what is the best version of me going to be?
If people want to find out more about what you do, Richard, how might they get in touch?
So they can take a look at borntospeak.com, where they'll be able to find more information about me, also my new book, You Were Born to Speak.
And when they read that book, what kind of things will they get from it?
They will get in there what normally takes us to share with a client over the course of a couple of years, and normally a client has to invest £30,000, £40,000, £50,000 to get that information And for $14.99, they get all of it. Everything I've learned for the last 18 years of teaching 50,000 clients and 25 years worth of life story journey going through learning communication skills. It's absolutely everything I could share apart from personal coaching.
You're putting it all out there.
I am.
Brilliant. Well, it sounds like an amazing book. I'll definitely be getting a copy. Richard, just summarize for us a final message to the professionals listening. How might they raise their game and communicate more effectively?
Keep this in mind. If you're about to go and speak to a team, about to speak to an audience, just keep in mind, how much time are you really speaking for? If you're speaking to 20 people for an hour, you're going to speak for 20 hours. And so give it time and the preparation that it deserves. Don't just think you're going to go in there and wing it. Give it the respect it deserves, and therefore you'll be able to really shift the needle of how people respond after that meeting.
Well, Richard Newman, author of Born to Speak, this has been amazing. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world-class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.